Welcome back to another episode of the Reseller's Mindset Podcast. My name is Mike, also known as a used book guy on YouTube, along with my friend and fellow full-time reseller, Johnny B. We help people start and grow their reselling businesses from the ground up. We also have a weekly Zoom call and private Discord for all YouTube members. Head on over to youtube.com/usedbookguy to join the channel and gain access to the full-length podcast, Zoom call, and private Discord today. Let's get into this week's episode.
What is up, everybody? Welcome into another episode of Reseller's Mindset Podcast. Mike next to Johnny. Johnny's the brains of the operation, especially on this topic today. And it's a good one. And I think it's super important. And I'm going to have some, I got a lot to kind of knock this one out of the park when it comes to why can't we as resellers think past the idea that thrift stores are the only place that exists, right? So he said, let's talk about sourcing and kind of, you know, some good sources, some bad sources. And I'll go first here because I got one that's been on my mind lately is when I first started reselling, Goodwill was my jam, Johnny. Like I walk into a Goodwill and I'm like, I can't even carry all the stuff out. I'm like, Dev, carry this stuff, get the cats too. And I haven't stepped foot in a Goodwill now in probably close to 2 months. And it's crazy, right? Because that's where I started. I remember, like, the store still exists not that far from me, my old honey hole, Deb likes to call it. And the only time I really go in Goodwill now is just to see if anything's changed. I know it hasn't, or like the nostalgia feeling of being inside of a Goodwill that just absolutely sucks. But I haven't been in one in 2 months, and honestly, I've sourced more quality items than I ever have. So you're probably thinking, well, Mike, you're not going to the 15 Goodwills you have in your routes. What have you replaced them with? Well, unfortunately, I don't like to, you know, hide all my great sources because I'm worried you're all going to run out here and steal everything like other resellers. I've been going to record shops. I mean, this past week, I've spent close to $1,000 in two record shops, and that's only two stores. That's what I replaced them with, and you don't know until you know. So I think it's good to kind of cover this idea of maybe some sources you had that you no longer have or some that you kind of came up with. But dude, record shops, I mean, you pay a little bit more, but not really, because I'm paying $3 for a DVD at Goodwill. The record shops, believe it or not, even though they're record shops, they got it right in their name, they have thousands and thousands of DVDs to go along with the cassettes and the CDs. And the one record shop even had books in the record shop. And their prices range from like $2, and some sets I'm paying $15 for. But we have the data in front of us to make the decision to buy it. And I will say this, another benefit to going to a place like that is it's small, locally owned, and they check for the quality of the things, right? Unlike a thrift store where you go, you don't look inside the case, you buy it, you get home, there's no disc inside the case. That doesn't exist at record shops. These people actually take pride in their business, and these discs are basically brand new looking. I personally love record, and you know I've been pushing heavily in the group to check your local record shops, and people are having success with it. So that's kind of my initial story. I'm going to throw it over to you.
Yeah, I mean, I used to go out to estate sales and thrift shops as well when I first started. But for me, it'd be like, I need my time back because I'm doing bulk, and I need more time to process than I do needing to source or wanting to dial down the sourcing time in general. And the power went out for a couple of days because of some storm, I want to say 5-6 months ago, four to six months. This is back when the employee was still here. I was like, she shows up to work. I'm like, okay, we're going to go shopping, I guess. The power is out. So we went down to a couple old places I used to go. And I'll tell you, Mike, they were very happy to see me. They didn't know we were in the store, the manager. She came out and finally saw me and flagged me over. Didn't know you were coming by. We got stuff in the back. Would you like to come in the back again? I'm like, sure, why not? Here all day. Because power's out. And they were so nice. They gave me my old discount. I wasn't expecting it because I haven't been in there like 9, 10, 12 months plus, something like that. And I had good stuff, quality. The thing I like about them, they're in the back. And they run a thrift store, but they got laundry machines back there. They're constantly cleaning the clothes. They're scrubbing the hats, even the books. They get books and they separate them into, they're going to donate this to some other thrift store. And then there's ones they're going to put out in their store. So they do quality checking in the back before it comes out to the front on everything. Their store is immaculate. Everything's clean and They have one dedicated worker that has one of those push things because it's carpeted. That's all they do all day is they just go around doing that. They're a little bit more pricey than your traditional thrift store, but I'll pay up for stuff I know has been quality checked versus just digging it out of the cart and putting it on the shelf. Whatever happens, happens kind of deal. Now, on those kind of places, I've been to those places too, but I always hate it. Like, I find something I know is good, but then when I open it up, it's either damaged or the spine cracks or there's pages missing or it's been doodled in by a 9-year-old. It's like, come on, this is a waste. This is literally, again, wasting my time. I don't like to waste time. So I think going up in quality to get your time back actually ends up you getting more profit in the long run. Because again, it's Mike doesn't like for me to say it, but yeah, it's your profit per hour. And I want to spend it as aptly as I can to make the most dollars so that I can. And doing it at a junky, the cobwebs, roaches, and rats are all over the place. No. I'm gonna go over here where there's none of that, or at least they call the exterminator now and again.
I agree. And I'll say this, when I first started this business, everybody used to talk about backroom access, Johnny. You got to get in the back room. You got to get in the back room. I'm here to tell you there is some validity to it, but I do think the approach has to be completely different than what is thrown out there, right? Because everybody makes this team, Johnny. You just walk in and say, yo, can I go in the back room? Like, that doesn't work. You got to build rapport, build a relationship, and have a normal conversation. And I do think I'm a firm believer in karma and treating people the way you want to be treated. I think in the thrift store world, especially with the mom and pop shops, the money is good for them, but they just want somebody that's relatable. They don't want some loser book dealer coming in, just being a pompous idiot about everything, know-it-all. Oh, yeah, do. Like, they want somebody that can have a normal conversation, explain what you do, what they got going on, and then that's how you build this. And we got so many people in the group that are in the back room of any type of establishment you can imagine. And they're all down to earth, wholesome people that, if you just had a conversation out in the street, it'd be a pleasant conversation to have. And I guarantee you, that's how they got in the back room. It wasn't going in and just being like, hey, you got stuff in the back? Can I go back there? Like, no. What usually happens, at least in my cases, I go in the store, a shop, I go up to the counter, I can't even carry all the DVDs, books, and CDs. And they're like, nobody buys this stuff. Why are you buying $300 worth of this stuff? It's even happened in record shops. And a dude's like, dude, let me know when you're coming back. Shoot me a text message. Give me the business card. I'll bring in all the other DVDs that I have so you can go through them. It's just a simple conversation. And I do think it is cemented by you actually spending money at the store because they're like, shit, this dude's serious. Like, when's the last time somebody's come in and spent $100, $200 on stuff we never sell?
Right, you don't really have to ask for it. It's just given to you if you buy frequently, not necessarily in quantity, but frequently. Like if you come in there and only grab 25 items, but you do it 1 to 2 times a week, every week, and you're consistent. Again, consistency in this business is huge, even on the buying front, because they know you're reliable. They know you're going to get their money, and they'll approach you trying to get more of your money at some point. And if you're buying, if you're niching and you're buying the same thing, you can ask this question, and it doesn't mean you're asking to go in the back room. Do you have any more of these? Show them what you mean by these, or hey, it's on the countertop. Do you have any more of these? And they'll either say yes or no, and they may say yes, we got some in the back. Come on back, and we'll get you rung up here because you're already committing to buy. It's like going on a date, right? You don't go sit down at the table and like, hey, you want to go back to my place? Your meal hasn't even arrived. You haven't even had a conversation yet. Come on, man. Come on.
It's true. It's true. And I just try to, we're not sitting here saying that the thrift store business is sucks and it's dead. It's whatever. We're just trying to get people to go a little bit further upstream to get the better quality stuff. And believe it or not, you pay the most at the thrift store and it's the most picked over stuff. So not only do I want you to get better quality, I'm telling you, you're going to pay less for the better quality stuff. That's our only goal here. We're not, because listen, thrift stores are still, 80%, 85% of my stuff comes from thrift stores. So I'm just saying I made a little switch and I'm seeing the benefits. And honestly, I didn't have a choice. What was I going to do? Keep going to Goodwills and finding one item, two CDs, three CDs? Like, that's not sustainable. So I had to make a switch. Another thing I switched to this year was pawn shops. Pawn shops sell DVDs and video games, and usually you can get them for pretty cheap. I don't know much about video games, but I know what titles are pretty popular, what I can get for. And yet again, these places make sure the things aren't completely beat up. And pawn shops give DVDs away, dude. I never pay more than like 50 cents at a DVD at a pawn shop. And sometimes they have a decent. I'm going to one this next week, and they got 10 for a dollar DVDs and CDs. And they have like thousands of these things. Like, it's crazy to me the opportunity we have if we just think a little bit outside the box.
Right, I have one guy who sells to me locally. He still will, even though my store shut down right now, because I'm moving. Nothing bad has happened for you people listening. I'm just going to be relocating. But he will open every CD. He will check the back. He will check to see if the disc is in there. He'll flip it over to make sure it's got both front and back artwork. I never have to check his stuff, ever. Anybody else, I'd have to check and do all that. But he's taken part of that labor away from me. Because he knows my money's right every time. He gets paid for quality because I don't pay. The deal was before I mentioned this to him, I don't pay for this or this or this or this. You may have these back. Okay, I'm going to rectify the situation so I know exactly how much money I'm going to get when I come over and see Johnny. It's going to be to the penny because it's correct. Now, I checked him one more time after that. I haven't had to check him since. And that's just great. It saves, again, saves me time. I love having my time saved. It is almost, it is a strong runner up for money. I love money more than anything, but having my time given back to me, love that almost as much.
And I've been telling people that's a good thing to hit on. A lot of people that just start getting into selling CDs and DVDs, they're worried about like scratches and like they don't want to spend the $200 for a resurfacer in the beginning, which makes sense. And I said, well, you go to a record shop, they check it all. You don't got to worry about having to resurface anything. And then they do. Thrift stores are expensive anymore. And in the realm of, if we're talking in the media realm, thrift stores have become 5x what it used to cost to buy a book, CD, DVD at a thrift store. So you're only helping yourself. Sure, if it's a real good store, I still got really good thrift stores I can go to once every 2 weeks, fill up an IKEA bag and get out of there. But why not be the best you possibly can be at sourcing? I guess this is what this comes down to. And this isn't like the end of the line, like for me or for you when it comes to our sourcing strategies. Because we're always open to having another relationship if the quality's there and the price is right. I mean, we'll take it. There's an endless supply of the items we sell. And you could argue, unless you're in a super rare collectible category, there's an endless supply of anything we can resell, no matter what the category is. You just have to find a good supply. And sometimes you have to pay up for it. But I'll tell you right now, a lot of cases, I mean, you pay down for it. I bought full collections, full Stephen King first editions for 15 cents a pound. Like they were in the plastic sleeves. I'll never forget it. I'm not a Stephen King fan. I probably should have kept them because they'd probably be worth billions in 20 years. But 15 cents a pound for all first edition Stephen King. I'm talking every single book that he ever put out. I mean, all you got to do is open your eyes.
I think the biggest thing I have in sourcing is I let everybody know what I sell and who I am. I mean, even in this podcast, my name is in there. Even Mike's thing, it's there. But everybody knows me as a paperback seller because I do sell paperbacks because I talk about it all the time. So people know he's not just a bookseller, he likes these paperbacks. And not only that, he likes paperbacks from the 80s on back. And see, I'm talking about on this podcast. So everybody listening now knows I'm the paperback guy from 1980s on back. And then I get approached with deals. I don't even ask for them. They get thrown my way. Mainly in the group. I'm in several groups, so they all know what I sell. And when somebody comes across, I get a message, "Hey, you interested?" I'm like, "Yeah, send me some photos." Probably the answer is going to be yes. Or I have ongoing relationships that come out of this. I have a couple that have networked with me. They run bigger book operations, and they don't like the stuff that I like. So I'm a solution to their problem. Man, they get a little bit of cash. It's a win-win-win. I mean, just look at the storage unit guys. It's the same principle. They take what they want, then they go out to the flea or they post it on Marketplace to put it back in the ecosystem to either other resellers, or they try to make a couple dollars on it themselves, but they really don't care about that other stuff. They want it gone. They want their space and time back, just like I do. I want my space and time back. I guess space is another thing we didn't touch on, but no, that's definitely a thing if you're not running a warehouse when it comes to sourcing. Like if you're running out of your home or storage unit, you got to be a little bit more picky on what you're taking back with you. Because if you take back just a pile of junk or an absorbent amount that exceeds your capacity, you're going to have a hard time to get back out and go do it. Because sourcing, to most people, the treasure hunting aspect or the going out, that's the fun part of this game, sure. But if you bottleneck yourself not being able to do it because you're filled to the ceiling, front to back, and you got to get through it somehow, some way.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I like to think about sourcing as like almost investing or like having an investment portfolio. You have to diversify, right? You're not just buying all single stocks. And you would just say you only go to, I equate single stocks to going to the same Goodwill bins 5 days a week. Sooner or later, you're going to get jammed up. Now, what smart people do, they spread their money out. I got some in bonds. I got mutual funds. Maybe a few single stocks here and there if it's something that, aligns with what I want to do. But if one goes boom, the whole thing doesn't go boom, right? Like you're still afloat. You're still going. You're still making progress. And I think that's what it kind of relates to with me is because we look at, I got thrift stores, I got libraries, and then I have back rooms of thrift stores, and then I got bulk pickups that I get from like Facebook Marketplace and all of those types of places. So that's four completely separate almost investments I have into my big portfolio here of reselling. And if you just got one, if you just got that one library or that one thrift store chain or what, no matter what it is across the board, and something happens, maybe the donations slow down, or maybe the thrift store raises their prices, which Goodwill has done. And I went from 97 cents books and now they're all at least $3. You are bound by their rules.
Yeah, I mean that's the thing. There's their rules and there's your rules, right? You have expectations, they have their expectations. It's usually monetary expectations. But you have the additional one of quality, right? So if you decide, hey, I want to buy it all and you're trying to make this a repeat thing, but I have the following expectations of you. They need to know this if you do have expectations. I don't want water damage books. I don't want it to fall apart on me when I touch it because it shatters because it's old and hanging on by maybe a thread or a piece of tape, honestly. Like it's got to have both front and back covered. These simple things, but you have to spell it out to them because they don't know. They just think you just want books because books. So you are the person to set the expectations. Now it's their end on their side because this is a business transactions to accept your expectations of quality or not. If they say, no, we're not going to do that, you need to take it as is, then it's your choice. Am I going to spend more time by taking this deal on, or am I going to take a walk to deal with somebody who will meet my expectations? If you're not choosing door number two, I'm sorry, you're doing it wrong. You need to choose door number two.
Yeah, you're 100% correct. And I want to hammer that home because we talked about it. This stuff is everywhere, dude. Me and you can go, every house has a piece of media in it, like in the world. So why are we feeling obligated? And if you think, if you're the person that's like, I want to be a bulk seller, and you think these mega bulk sellers just have one source, like one source that only brings their the tractor trailers? No, they have multiple sources because you can't afford that one source to go belly up. You can't afford to have that go belly up. Have the conversation up front, like Johnny's saying, 100% crystal clear across the board exactly what you want. Because you can't say, yeah, I'm the book person, and you show up and there's nothing but Webster dictionaries. Well, you didn't say you didn't take dictionaries, Johnny. So here goes 3,000 pounds of Webster dictionaries. Then you're in a situation where, shit, I didn't say that. So, like, this has to be thought out, and it all kind of relates back to treating reselling as a business, right? Thinking at it like from a business person, like this is my business. What does my business want? You can't just be the generic, I'll take all the books person, and then you just wind up with a big mess. Go where the quality is, and no deal is not too good to pass up. There's always going to be more opportunities along the road. There's never been a week where I'm like, well, I found nothing this week, so I guess I got to go pay for the shit nobody else wants. It's down at the Goodwill bins. Like, There's no deal that you have to feel like you're tied to in this business, especially in the media world, because it is everywhere for the taking. Every little town has a library that probably runs on volunteers, don't have enough volunteers, gets donations every single day. All you got to do is go have a conversation. You don't even have a conversation. You could send an email, you could do whatever you want. But I would never feel tied to a deal. Honestly, I would almost be the, I know, like, I'd be like how you are. Like, I have expectations. My expectations aren't meet. We're going to have a conversation. I'll tell you right now, conversations aren't fun, right? When the day comes and I got to fire Johnny, it's not going to be a fun conversation, right? It won't happen, at least not this year, although we're coming to the end of the year. Maybe next year when we reevaluate the budget and your salary goes up from zero to zero. But hard conversations are a part of this, right? And we all had to have them at one point in time. As a store manager at CBS, I used to have them all the time, and it's not fun, right? It's not fun to tell somebody, like, hey, you know, this doesn't meet my expectations. Like, you're almost giving somebody a performance review. But Johnny said, you got the cash money, right? You gave them what you want, what you accept. Okay, I'm paying somebody, and I expect these types of goods in return. If you don't get those goods, then you need to have a conversation and be like, hey, this doesn't make sense to me, right? We had the conversation. Maybe it was good the past 10 times, but this time it wasn't. And then the next one isn't. Okay, I'm not saying blow a gasket because the first time you got something that wasn't right, you know, that's just bad business. But if it's something that's an ongoing problem, make note of it and then we address it. And if they say, hey, it is what it is, well, then you say, hey, it is what it is. Me and my wallet are going somewhere else.
Yeah, exactly. Now, if your expectations are, I want you to flip through the book and check for underlying every one, and you're dealing with a bulk person who sells in bulk to other resellers, that may be a bit too much, or they're like, sure, but I need to charge X for that because they also have a time metric for dollars. So you need to decide once they give that number, if they do give a number, that's fine. Or they may just say, sure, yeah, that's no big deal. We have Jimmy the intern. That's how we'll treat all our interns. Fine. But they may want to charge you more. And you got to decide if it's worth it or not. And if it's not worth it, again, dollars too high for the kind of service you're offering. I have other people, or I'll go find other people who will deal at my dollar per item on my expectations. Because you're in control because it is your wallet. They want the things in your wallet, but they may not want to do for the time the amount of dollars that's in your wallet. And that's okay on their end. And that's okay on your end. You're just not meant to do business together. It's as simple as that. You're not the right customer for them, and they aren't the right source for you. That's fine. You got to let that go. You can't make it personal. This is entirely business. You can respect their decision, maybe a little annoyed by it, but you can respect it and move along and go find somebody else.
Yeah, I'm a firm believer in valuing your time and having expectations. And if they're not met, then being held accountable, right? It's almost like kind of expectations we have within ourselves, within our business, right? If we expect ourselves to, you know, list 10 items a day on eBay or do 5 boxes a week on Amazon, and we don't keep up with our expectations, like we're just pissed off at ourselves, we're unmotivated. But yeah, for some reason in the reselling world, see it all the time. Like resellers just get suckered all the time and they just continue to get suckered. I'm just like, just be done with it. This stuff's everywhere. I mean, you could resell anything and find it in quantity anywhere. I don't understand why we're like, well, you know, it's like hypothetically speaking, if I decided, all right, I'm gonna go the wholesale route and I'm just gonna start selling Gaylords because I'm the book guy and everybody loves the book guy and I'll sell Gaylords for a premium price, and you know, the quality just sucks. But Johnny's like, well, it's Mike, so you know, sooner or later, maybe the Gaylord will be good that he actually sends me that I overpay for, and it never happens. But if that's happening today, there's people out there that are buying in bulk from a source that they know sucks, but they're so scared to lose the source when if they just open up their window and yelled out like the JG Wentworth commercial, like, it's my money and I want it now. Like somebody else will pop up, like, hey, I got books for sale, right? Like somebody pops out, hey, you said you buy books. Here goes, can you gonna weigh this right now? You gonna give me my cash right now? It's everywhere.
Trying to say this politely. It's hard, Mike. It's hard. It's your fault if you're continuing to do bad business with yourself.
Oh,
It is
yeah.
your fault 100%. You are the master of your wallet and the goods you receive from your wallet. That is all on you, sir or ma'am, to make the corrections necessary to put more dollars in it. Because if you're having to throw away 90% of the stuff you're getting and your dollar, your wallet shrinks because of that, because you got a bill from them, what was left over, you're barely making by. Plus, we're in media. And if you're just the eBay seller, long turnover. It's going to be a while before you're even back up to par from that purchase. But if you're repeatedly hurting yourself, it's like punching yourself in the face. Go ahead, punch yourself in the face right now, listener. Tell me how it feels. We're not responsible for any brain injuries that may or may not occur from my suggestion here. But it hurts, right? Yeah, it's going to hurt. And if you're repeatedly punching yourself in the face, well, I don't know what to do with you. Stop it.
I got the question that we should have based this podcast around. And you're gonna have to give me an answer because I don't have one. I was thinking about it here while you were telling viewers not to punch themselves in the head.
No, I did, and then I said we're not responsible, but go ahead.
Resellers are so cheap. They don't want to spend more than $1, $2 for an item at a thrift store. But if a bulk opportunity comes along and it costs them $3,000 and they got the photos of the pallets, the Gaylords, money all of a sudden means nothing. They're willing to put it on credit cards, they're willing to get a HELOC to buy the bulk inventory. I don't understand why are we so tight at the thrift store? But you get this cool looking bulk opportunity, and we just completely forget about what your dollar is worth and what you would get if you took that 3 grand and spent it at thrift stores and flipped that into something. It's just for some reason the word bulk makes people just everything goes out the window. They just need it. They need to have it no matter what the cost is.
When you're dealing with deals in the thousands or tens of thousands, and you don't go to inspect it, and you're doing it off photos, I'm sorry, you're foolish. Unless you've done business with this person before, then maybe it's got some credibility. But if it's the first time, no, I'm gonna go look at it and I'm gonna go touch it just like I was in a thrift store. And to your point of why can't we do it in a thrift store? If they're asking $3 for a $300 book, please take my dollar by $3, please. I don't care that it's $3 at that point, but it's got to be the right book. It's got to be the right quality. And the same deals here, even on a bigger scale. If they're offering you to do a $3,000 or a $30,000 deal and you don't go inspect it to make sure it met those two metrics, the price is right and the quality's right, you are a fool. Plain and simple.
I'm going to break it down real easy. So we buy, me and Johnny buy a Gaylord. We're in the media realm. You're expecting like 90% is going to be trash. Maybe 85%. So at least it's with 15%. Say there's 1,000 books in the Gaylord. We walk away with 150 items. I'm here to tell you go to a few thrift stores, you're going to come out with a lot more than that. And guess what? There ain't no getting rid of the other 85% of shit. You literally only bringing home the good stuff, right? All the junk stays behind. This idea that people just want to run into these huge deals, this is what sinks ships all the time. We've seen it over the years. People come and go in the group because they get that shiny Facebook marketplace. Oh, buy in bulk. We got bulk. We got Amazon liquidated pallets, right? Great for reselling, right? And
No,
all of
thank
a sudden, the person that's got a $100 a week thrifting budget is willing to spend $800 on this random Amazon liquidation pallet because that's what resellers do, right? This is how we're going to get rich. There's no possible way we can lose when we're buying in bulk. And I'm here to tell you that is completely wrong, asinine thinking because you don't value your time and you're spending capital you don't have. Most people that buy these once in a lifetime opportunities, they don't have the capital to actually support that, especially if the deal goes south, which a lot of these usually do, or maybe you break even and you just lost. You might break even monetarily, but your time's going out the window. You lost 2 weeks, 3 weeks, however long it takes you to get through it. It's hard for me to understand this idea of sourcing at thrift stores. It can be brutal, but if you track your thrift stores, have the route, it makes sense. Go a little bit upstream. I'm not saying every bulk deal out there is a scam. I'm not saying everything you're going to buy is a scam, because that's not the case. I have plenty of, I deal with bulk with libraries all the time, and it's quality stuff. But like, it's quality stuff because it's not picked over. Now, if it was Johnny selling me his leftovers that he already scanned, I lose automatically. I lose my money, I lose my time, I lose everything. But we can't think about that because Johnny just got the cool looking palette that's stacked, and maybe he puts like that one Stephen King book up top, so you think like, oh
I
shit.
totally do that. Like, there's the good stuff on top, right?
Yeah.
Now, another thing, the people that buy online only, you may not, because you're buying in lower quantity usually. I'm not saying go inspect the 10 disc from the guy in Connecticut. I'm not saying that. I'm saying if you have a supplier and it's the first time that you two are conducting business with each other, if it were me, I would take a trip out to Connecticut to see what's going to be in my box. I'll buy there, or I'll correct them right then and there, because that is an in-person thing that needs to happen if I'm going to do recurring business with a person. It needs to be correct. That way, when I receive it and it's incorrect, I make a phone call with all the power. Like, look, I flew up there. It was expensive for me to go see you, tell you how I wanted my shipments to be. They are in the wrong at that point. I'm not in the wrong because I went up there, I lay down the law, Johnny's law, of what it needs to be if you're going to receive my dollars and I'm going to receive your goods. This is how it's supposed to work, plain and simple.
I think another thing we have to think about here is when you start building some of these relationships, even within thrift stores, it's okay if things change as long as you have this follow-up conversation, right? So like some of my sources could be like, hey, are you taking these yet? Like, do you want this encyclopedia set? Or like, if things change and all of a sudden I want to take encyclopedias and I go to them and say, hey, it's okay now if you start putting encyclopedias in my pile. That's fine. Don't feel like the first conversation you ever had with this person is like how it's got to be forever. It's an open line of communication I think you got to have when it comes to these relationships. And the open line of communication has to be more than, hey, your stuff's ready, pay us, and we'll send it to you. There's got to be more. It's got to be more personable. I'll tell you right now, if I'm buying Gaylords or I'm buying thousands of anything in my business, I want to be able to have this person's phone number. I want to be reached out to at least on a weekly basis to have a conversation of what they got going on, what I got going on, when's the shipment coming. I think it's important to cultivate some of these relationships because when you find good ones, they're good, right? Like the libraries I have, like it's forever as long as I'm doing this. And then even when I stop doing this, I can like pass the torch on to somebody else in the area that does this. Like, hey, I have these sources. I'm no longer doing this. Why don't you come with me one time? I'll introduce you to everybody. These relationships, I show up to the library. I got donuts, Dunkin' Donuts, right? I got the little munchkins. I even had to choose the donuts, right? So I used to go on Dunkin' Donuts and they would just have pre-ready like dozens of donuts. Well, now Dunkin' Donuts got like these kiosks and they make you choose your dozen, right? So I'm sitting there like, I don't know, it's like 35 different donuts. Dude's like, well, we ain't got this one. We ain't got this one. I'm like, dude, I just chose things randomly anyway. Like, I'm used to just you giving me a random dozen of donuts. But that type of stuff goes so far with people, like bringing them a donut. Like, oh my God, like it's a donut. Like, oh my God, like you're the hero. And you'd be amazed. Like, they got signs I posted on YouTube. Like, Mike does not have a truck. He's got a sedan. Please box the books nicely. And like, they do it. Like you take care of people and they'll take care of you. I guess that's what it comes down to.
I did this once with they're no longer around. It was a senior citizen like activity club thing, and they had a library in there. So I used to rotate their library, meaning I give them books and they give me what's circled out. And the first time I dealt with them, I asked for them to have them boxed ready to go because I assumed they had some kind of staff or something. They didn't. So these old people got the tiniest boxes known to man. You can maybe put four hardbacks in there. And they had giant pallets worth stacked up like that. My mind was blown that they got these tiny boxes and then packed and taped these tiny boxes for me because of my request. I felt a little bad because of an assumption I made, but it was like, huh, if you just ask, you will receive sometimes. But may not be able to receive like you thought, because I had to undo all these boxes. There's only $4 a box, but I couldn't complain because they had complied with my request in a different way than I expected.
Never going to be perfect. I got another story that relates to that. I worked at Kmart for a while, and the one of the managers told the lawn and garden person, like, they set up like little displays, right? And he told the guy, hey, put the mulch in the display, right? The mulch, just put it around the garden. Like, so they got like a little fountain set up for a display. So he's, yeah, put the mulch in the display so it looks nice. So he calls me, you got to come see this. So we go out to the lawn and garden area, and the mulch is in the display, Johnny, but it's just the bag mulch. The
He put the
mulch,
bags.
he put the bags of mulch in the display.
They did exactly as was requested of them, but it was the wrong way.
That is exactly it. And go into these things knowing that it's not going to be perfect, right? I still get jammed up sometimes. I had a pickup where, it was more than I thought it was going to be, and it wasn't communicated to me. But once you're in that situation, you got to get it done, right? So it's not going to be just roses and rich money falling out from the sky. It's going to be things where you can't plan for. There's certain things you can't plan for. And what we just talked about, even if you say things, you know what you mean in your head, but this person or the person you're speaking to, or then they have to relay the message, it can be taken a completely different way than what you thought it was going to be taken. And then you wind up with, DiGiorno boxes full of books because Johnny said, just put them in boxes. And I said, well, we ate a lot of DiGiornos this week. So, let's put the books in the DiGiorno boxes.
Right. And this goes outside of reselling. This goes with any relationship, a friendship, a personal romantic relationship, a business relationship. Never assume, never presume, because you're wrong, usually 99.9% of the time, on whatever you got noodling up here in the old brain case. I'm sorry you are. So you either ask or you need to spell it out explicitly. That way it's crystal clear, and then ask the call of the clarifying question, do you understand? Because people are afraid to look stupid a lot, and they'll say, yes, I understand. And then you can do the last follow-up, okay, can you explain to me what I just asked of you? And you're not being rude, but you're making all the attempts that could possibly be made to make sure that it's crystal clear between you and them. And again, this goes beyond business. This goes to friendships, personal romantic relationships, acquaintances, people you just meet for the very first time. You cannot assume. Can't judge a book by its cover. There you go. I made a book pun. Ha 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 ha.
All right, Johnny kind of wrapped it up there. He gave you all relationship advice. Good luck taking that. He is not
And I told you to punch
responsible.
yourself in the face this podcast, too.
I mean, he's going to have you guys all over the place. Good luck taking his advice. It's not insured. It's not backed by the, what is it, the FDIC? Like, there's no backing to what he says. But
We're
yeah,
not responsible for you hurting yourself.
we are not responsible. But I do think it is so important to think about sources and diversify your sources. It's kind of like the idea of selling on multiple platforms, which a lot of you do. You protect yourself in that aspect, so why not protect the stuff you're getting the same exact way? This all this conversation is about is, if you're the thrift store person, email a library, email a clothing rag house, email an estate sale company. You'd be amazed that people want their stuff gone, and you can give it to them for little to nothing, and you get it before the thrift store gets their grubby paws over it. We all hate the Goodwill. All right, well then why don't we just get everything before it goes to the Goodwill? I even thought about doing this. What if you just set up a little tent out back of a Goodwill, like not on their property, when somebody rolled up with donations, dropping off the Goodwill? I'll give you $10 for that. Just bring it over here. I mean, I'm just saying, dude. They
Are you
would.
good? Yeah.
I'll unload it for you. I'll bring it from your car to my car. I'll give you $10. You can sit out there. Don't be looking like some sketchy person, but maybe got a little tuxedo on.
Sourcing at the bins before it hits the bins. That's a clever idea. I like that.
I mean, every store's got a donation center, so like you could literally kind of get a little pop-up tent across the street and say, I'll buy everything you're about to donate, big ass sign. Like, sure, people give you riffraff, but at the end of the day, what do you think the Goodwill's doing with it? You think all this money's going to support, homeless people in America? You're dead wrong. This is going all in pockets out there. These companies are as shameless as we can get, and at least you're giving the person that's donating some money for their items. Sure, we won't get everybody, but I guarantee you get rid. Dude, there's so many. I just came up with that off the top of my head. There's so many ways you can make money doing this. I mean, it blows my mind. But hey, We can't leave the goodwill because if you step outside the goodwill, all of a sudden weird things start happening. You know what happens? You start making more money, you start finding better quality stuff, and you actually spend less money. All right, Johnny, I'm out here. I'm not even letting you wrap it up. We'll talk to you all in next week's episode.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Reseller's Mindset Podcast. Today's full episode and all previous episodes are available to all YouTube members, along with the weekly Zoom call and private Discord. Head on over to youtube.com/theusedbookguy and consider joining for as little as $2.99 a month.